Blog Talk Radio.
Only Ujamaa can save us. Find out why we say that. We'll be back in a couple of minutes. Our roots began in Africa, where we enjoyed self-determination and freedom, which were rooted in our sovereignty. Peace, family. Welcome to Dare to Win, the Us Lifting Us weekly radio program that airs every Thursday evening from 9 p.m. to 10 p.m. Eastern Time. Dare to Win is the place where we have sobering conversations about the economic plight of Black people and the imperative that we build the global economic machinery that will free us and once again put us on the path of making history. We at Us Lifting Us have developed an exact methodology on how to build global machinery and pass it forward to our children and future generations. To join tonight's conversation, please call 929-477-2789. Press the number 1 on your keypad when you want to make a comment or ask a question. If you prefer to listen on your computer, go to www.usliftingus.com. Scroll down to the bottom of the homepage, click on the Dare to Win button, then click on Listen Live. You will be on the Blog Talk Radio site at that time. If you want to get reminders from Blog Talk Radio for upcoming Dare to Win programs, click on the Follow button. Ulu members, we have our own social media community. Please join if you have not already done so. There is a Dare to Win group, and we would like to have your feedback on past Dare to Win programs as well as topic suggestions for future programs. I am Sister Q, and joining me for this evening's discussion is Brother Ankti, is a member of Uru. Peace, Brother Ankti. How are you doing tonight?
Greetings, Sister Q. I'm doing well. Good to hear your voice, hear you sounding so good. And I'm feeling excited. I'm really looking forward to this evening's conversation.
I am as well. So to get started, Brother Ankti, tonight's discussion is Only Ujamaa Can Save Us. What are some of the problems you see that we are facing now, Brother Ankti?
That's a great question. And I said I'm excited because the ancestors have thrust us into a historical moment of epic proportions.
Mm.
We are poised to take control of our reality and to build something really new if we can understand the circumstances that bring us to this point. It should be obvious to all of us by now that we are in a war. As the gun violence in our communities explodes and the body count soars, why is Congress unable and unwilling to act? The simple answer is the lawmakers in Washington and in our state legislatures and in our local county commissions have been bought by the gun makers. So what can African people do to not only protect ourselves, but to take charge of our reality once and for all? Simply, we must build a new ecosystem for ourselves and all who desire to live in peace. We in Ulu call this new ecosystem Ujamaa, or family-centered, group-owned, cooperative economics. Someone may be wondering, how does Ujamaa stop gun violence? So let's address this question now and then talk about the process of building Ujamaa. The first thing we have to understand is that this gun violence that we see in Uvalde, in Buffalo, in Tulsa, these are symptomatic of collapsing capitalism. Congressional gridlock, even in the face of escalating gun violence, so-called inflation, the gas prices are up to like $4.50 a gallon here in Atlanta. They're $5 in other places. We see this nationwide shortage of baby formula. Capitalism simply is dying, and we are living through its death. We now find ourselves in the belly of a dying beast. Now, Sister Q, you and I remember from an earlier time how we often said that America was the belly of the beast. It was true then, it's still true now. The problem is that this beast is dying, and we're caught up in the midst of the horror of that death. Not only is capitalism dying, capitalism is a grand larceny system on steroids, and I'll come back to that in a minute.
Okay.
But the first thing that we have to understand is that the way the news comes at us, it would seem that the problem is we got to do something about these 400-plus million guns on the streets, and there's only 330 million people in the country. How will people respond and pay their bills when it's costing almost $50 or $100 to fill up your gas tank? And what we're trying to make clear in Ulu is that all of these are symptoms. They're not the cause of the problem. They are the effect of a dying economic model. And the dying economic model is capitalism, but all of us have been brainwashed and brought into the system. We've grown up in this system we think, many of us think, it's the best thing since sliced bread. And so the first thing we have to do is disabuse ourselves of the notion that the death of capitalism somehow is a bad thing. I began by saying we find ourselves thrust by our ancestors in this very critical historical moment where we are on the precipice of doing something very dramatic. And what that is changing the economic model. In other words, we cannot and should not attempt to reform capitalism because at its core, it is a violent mechanism. It is doing precisely what it has always done, and it extracts. And it does both of them in a very violent way. And so for hundreds of years, it ran. We did not see the violence that it inflicted because much of it was in other parts of the world. So while it was raping the countries in South America, whether we're talking Ecuador or Bolivia or Chile or Honduras, we didn't see a lot of that destruction and horror. Whether it was overturning governments on the continent of Africa or turning Southeast Asian people into sweatshops to produce goods for Walmart. Again, that was removed from us by tens of thousands of miles, and we were blind and oblivious to the horror that this system exacts in order for it to make money. But now the violence has made its way to America's doorstep. And because it is a system that is based on violence, we see it now up close and in person. And to tell you the truth, it's really frightening to most of us. So what am I getting at? When I say that capitalism is a system of exploitation, we have to understand that we grew up, many of our parents told us, go to school, get a good education, get a good job with benefits, pension, and you can live happily ever after in America. You can participate in the American dream. And we, to a large extent, we saw the previous generation, many of them do just that. They got their college degrees. They went off to the major Fortune 500 corporations. They got positions. They got in positions that had union protection. They had pensions, and they were able to raise their families, send their children to college, take decent vacations. Everything looked pretty good. Now, all of a sudden, we find generation of college students who are coming out of college with so much college loan debt, it's going to take them 10 years to pay off the debt before they can even begin to build a future for themselves and their children. And and so the internal contradictions of capitalism now have become so sharp that more and more people are being pushed out of the quote-unquote middle-class opportunity, and the working class that had for a long time enjoyed a decent standard of living, their wages have remained stagnant for 30 years. And so now they are frustrated, and they're being told that the problem is immigrants. They're being told that black people have taken their jobs. They're being told that it's not the system, it's these other people that they have to be afraid of and put up walls and barriers to protect themselves from. So that's the narrative, and it makes no sense because it's not really based in fact, but now people are confused, they're afraid, and they see their savings dwindling. They see their jobs evaporating. They see the gas prices racing at the pump, and they're not quite sure what to do. And just before we came on air, Sister Q, I was watching some of the January the 6th hearings on the cable network news, and they don't even grasp the severity of what was in motion on January the 6th. This wasn't just a random upshot, that this was a planned and orchestrated attempt to overthrow one form of government to bring in what is known as fascism. I'm not going to go into a long conversation about fascism because we as a people should understand it, because that's what we lived through during the period of enslavement, where we had absolutely no rights, where we could be killed on a whim, where our labor was taken from us, and we were just beat down all the time. And any white person could walk up to us and do harm to us, and there was nothing that we could do. So America has had its form of fascism before, and what it's trying to do is return to that time of immigrants, of beating down black and brown people and Asian people, and elevating white men in particular and white people in general to say that this is what's going to save the country. And so our problem is that system simply will not work for the majority of the world's people. We are black melanated people, as you and I well know, are 9/10 of the planet's population. And people who lack melanin or have very small amounts of melanin are only 1/10 of the planet's population. And they're trying to figure out how they can maintain their grip on the world. And the only way they can do it is through violence. And that's why there are AR-15s all over the place, because that is the tool, that guns is the tool that these Europeans, when they established this white settler colony that came to be called America, it was at gunpoint that they took the land from the indigenous people. And it was at gunpoint that they slaughtered them and reduced the indigenous population in the Western Hemisphere from 20 million people about the time Columbus arrived to less than 500,000 people in the short span of less than 50 years. And so it's an extremely brutal people that we're dealing with. And we have to be very clear about what it is that will make a difference for us. And so that is why we in Ulu make a very hard case. We must change the economic model. Now, let me pause there. You may want to say something or ask a question.
No, I didn't want to. I'm letting you roll because I think what you're saying.
Okay.
And we do not have anyone on the board with their hand up. So please continue.
Okay. So as I'm saying, capitalism is collapsing under the weight of its own internal contradictions. So let's talk about the main contradiction that's at the core of why this system is not sustainable. It's called the primary contradiction in capitalism, and it's that it takes all of the workers to create the products that generate what is called profits or surplus.
Mm-hmm.
Now, while the workers and their labor produce this profit, produce this surplus, the people who own the factories, they claim the profit for themselves. In other words, they steal it. When people go to get a job, they know what the job is paying in terms of its hourly wage. It used to be whether it was $7 or $3 or $8 or $10 or $15 or $20. When you applied for the job, you knew what the hourly wage was, and you had made adjustments with that. You said, I can make it work for my family for that amount of money. And you hired on, right?
Yes.
What you did not understand was that you and all the people working around you, whether you were in an automobile factory or a steel mill or a factory that produced shirts, no matter what it was that you were making, when all that you had made was sold, the amount of profit that was generated from your collective work was 1,000 times more than what you got paid. the owners turned around and said to you, well, now, you know, when you applied for this job, we told you we were paying you $7 an hour, and you said, okay, so that's all mm-hmm. you get. The
right.
rest of the millions of dollars that are generated by this work, we keep that. That's our pay for that we took the risk and we put up the capital and we set up the factory and put in the machinery for you to do the work. But the rest mm-hmm. of the money, the complete surplus, that belongs to the owners. Now, we have to pause for a moment because this is a scam that has been run on working people. And because no one has pulled back the cover to say, no, wait a minute. We are creating the surplus that's being divided. At the very least, we should be at the table having some input in terms of how much is being divvied up, at the very least.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
You know, since it took all of us together, working together to produce the surplus, then all of us together should divide the surplus. Mm-hmm. That's the primary contradiction in capital. It takes the social production, but private appropriation. In other words, the folks at the factory who own the factories, they steal the profit. They steal the surplus. And they, because they also control the newspapers and the TV stations and the radio stations, they tell everybody that this is God ordained, this is the way it's supposed to be, and if you don't like this system, then you should find you another country to live in. But mm-hmm. I ask people again to just take a deep breath, exhale, and ask yourself the question, if myself and my coworkers produce this great amount of wealth, how is it that we're living in poverty?
Mm-hmm.
Because if the workers don't go to work, there is no profit to distribute, period. The factory can stand there. The robots are there. The raw materials are there. But without the work being done, there's no product, nothing to be sold, no money coming in, no ka-ching at the register. And that's simply because it's the work or the process of taking a raw material, people putting their human touch to that raw material and transforming that raw material into a finished product, that's what creates the surplus value in the first place. And so the surplus value really does belong to the people who do the work. I mean, that's mm-hmm. just the bottom line of the matter. It's the fact that we do not understand this, that we accept the system the way that it is, and then we wonder why the rich get richer and the poor get poorer. Well, that's simply because at the end of each week, we're walking out of there with a couple of hundred, maybe $150, $200 in a paycheck. Meanwhile, the owners of the business are walking out of there with $20,000, $50,000, $100,000. There will never be a balance in the society with an economic model that's that imbalanced. And that's why the economic model itself has to change. So the problem is this great internal contradiction is the owners are stealing the profits. That's why I say that capitalism is a grand theft larceny system on steroids. It always
right.
has been. And that's why when workers... Go ahead, Sister Q.
What I wanted to add to, you were saying that when a man or a woman applies for a job and they agree to, say, $15 an hour, when the company calculates how much the employee is costing them, they don't just include the $15 an hour. They basically charge the employee for floor space, you know, like if they're renting a building and it's so much per square foot, then that goes against the employee's cost of being there. Also, the health benefits, they have a dollar amount that they apply to that. Everything that takes place in regard to the employee while the employee is on the premise is calculated, added up, and applied against the employee. So you may say, well, I'm making $20,000 a year. That may be what you get minus taxes and all those other stuff they take out of your check. But on the company books, you might be looking at $60,000 because, you know, the floor costs so much, your desk costs so much, it costs so much for electricity for your little cubicle and whatever all else. So I just, you know, most people don't think in terms of that, but that's another way that they get you, you know?
Right. They have all kinds of... Go ahead.
I was going to say we have a caller on the line, so go ahead and finish your thought and you can open the line for this caller.
Well, I think the only other point that I wanted to make, for example, if you think about the history of the labor movement, when, you know, the minimum wage or the starting wage in many places was $2 or $3 an hour, when child labor was legal and children were in these very grimy, dangerous places, with each fight that resulted in a higher wage or better benefits or better working conditions, we have to ask ourselves the question. I saw this when I was working at McDonald's, and this was back when the minimum wage was about $3.25 an hour. And there was a great push, the minimum wage increased, and I think it got increased to $3.50 or $3.75. And no sooner than the wage was increased, the owner-operator of the franchise that I worked with went up about 5 or 10 cents on every product. So the Big Macs went up, the quarter pounders with cheese went up, the breakfast products went up. So in other words, these workers had fought and struggled and languished for years at this lower wage. They finally get organized and are able to push to get the minimum wage raised 25 cents, and in the very next week, prices went up on all the products. So their gain really was eliminated by the fact that the cost of living had just gone up. And what I saw in that moment, Sister Q, you know, people talk about inflation and yada, yada, but it was the owners who made the decision to raise the price. They could have kept the prices the same and allowed the workers to enjoy a higher living wage and reduced the amount of money that went into their pockets by a few dollars. They wouldn't have gone hungry or anything. But the way the system is designed, it's maximum profit. So there's always a tension to pay the workers as little as you can while charging the buying public as much as the market will bear for the product, so the amount of profit that is realized is ever increasing. And that system can become extremely irrational. And we see that in terms of the environmental damage that's done when these corporations know full and well that their operations are damaging the environment, yet and still they continue to operate and take no responsibility for that destruction that they do to the environment. So capitalism is simply an unsustainable system, and the unsustainability of that system is becoming more and more apparent each and every day. And that is why we're seeing the kind of erratic and destructive behavior that now becomes everyday reality for the majority of people who struggle every day just to make ends meet.
Right. Let me take this call and
yes, please do.
Back to peace. Caller with the last four digits 3440. Please state your name, where you're calling, your comment, or ask your question. Thank you.
Greetings, 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 family. This is a brother Shabaka calling from Southern Florida, where it's been raining. You know, I'm enjoying the conversation that Sister Q, you and her brother Ankti is having. But let me. I got a comment. I want to throw a little color into the mix. I don't want to. And I'm sure that brother Ankti, you didn't mean this. But I didn't want the people to believe that the Republicans are the fascists and that the Democrats for the past 2.5 years aren't. You know, they're about as fascist. They are supported by the same groups. I mean, the same businesses. You know, that anybody else. It's just that they are internationalists. Now, what do I mean by that? They're internationalists. You know that they got everybody under their little umbrella. All right. You know, different races and all that other kind of stuff. All right, they're the ones with the fancy foreign policy and all this other kind of stuff. Trump wanted to stay internal. He was what I called a micro white nationalist. His concern was Trump, but he gave the appearance that he was trying to make a better America better for the whites. Okay, and as a consequence of that, he was highly demonized by the international groups, who were just as rootless as a Trump. And if you didn't think so, I mean, all you got to do is look past the last 2.5 years of lockdowns and all that other kind of stuff. You know that Biden was just as rootless as a Trump was. In fact, I say that they're internationalists, international capitalists, all right, and they're in battle. They're still white folks. So I think when we talk about capitalism, you know, we need to talk about it, put it in context, all right? One, prior to the Civil War, blacks who were enslaved accounted for producing cotton, which was 60% of the U.S. exports, which fed our European market, 80%, which fed 80% of the European market. Now, I want you to think about that. This was blacks, all right, who contributed to that kind of wealth, all right? And when we look at today, we look at how we are in comparison to our beloved white workers, we're still at the bottom of the helm. So I think we need to put some color into it. It's not only capitalism, it's whiteism or white supremacy, if you want to call it. We don't want to lose sight of that. I'm not looking to partner with my white brother over here. I'm looking to partner with my white with my black brother and my black sister, all right, because I know that the same kind of people that charged the Congress, you know, on January 6th, all right, are the same kind of people whose father and mother lynched, you know, my mother and grandfather, you know, I'm using that symbolically, all right? All right, so I'm not fooled by that. In addition to that, Klaus Schwab, who's a German, who heads the World Economic Forum, I think we need to look at that because, see, he's getting ready to take capitalism to a new era. We can't talk about capitalism in the 1970s. We got to talk about its role in the 2020s and 2030. And we need to listen to him, and I think that he's only a figurehead because he's the most visible. But, I mean, what is being planned by he and his group of folks, just go to their site, World Economic Forum, and you will learn a lot about what they have publicly. We don't know what they have in their closed-door sessions, which we should know, because that includes, as being internationalists, that means that they're going to use us. You know, they're going to use us and pretend that they are benevolent and that they understand and that they're going to free us from the white Southern Confederate crackers, you know, in the South. But it's the Northern crackers that are just as dangerous, if not more so, all right, than those Southern white Confederate crackers. That's all I wanted to say. But a good program. I think it's educational. We just got to put a little bit more stuff in there. You know, I'm not here to work with my white brothers. I'm here to work with people of African descent, brothers and sisters. All right, take care.
Thank you for your comment, Brother Shibaka. Anything you want to say to that, Brother Amati?
I want to thank. I just want to thank Brother Shibaka for he provided a perfect segue for my next comment, which was before we discuss the problems of this extraction, the problems of exploitation of workers, we have to be very clear. Capitalism is the economic mechanism that undergirds American and global racism. It is capitalism that gives racism its staying power. We've said on this broadcast before that the root word for chattel and cattle is the same word, the word kaput, which means head, like in heads of cattle. So not only were our forebears worked for free and to burden and to death, but they were also transformed from human beings into livestock, into beasts of burden, to serve the financial interests of white slave owners. And Brother Shibaka is absolutely right. We've seen the owners of capitalism change parties when it suited their needs. So at one minute, they're Democrats, the Dixiecrats in the South. The next minute, they're Republicans. And we know that there is very little difference between the Democrats and the Republicans. So he's absolutely right on that. We're not making an argument for solidarities necessarily between black workers and white workers. We're simply saying that the system of capitalism is the problem, and it must be overthrown. We were changed from human beings into livestock. And so thorough was the process of chattelization of black people that it lingers even until today. Black people exist in the condition of what Professor Ezra Aharon calls chattel freedom. We need to just sit with that term for a minute. Chattel freedom. In the eyes of the white people, and especially white ruling people, black people remain chattel. Our bodies can be exploited and discarded at will. Witness George Floyd and the countless others brutally killed. This is bad enough. But even black people fail to recognize our own humanity, so we kill each other over sneakers, gold chains, or just an insult. So this problem, I'm just trying to lay the case, Sister Q, and to our audience, that the problem is the economic model that drives the global world, whether we're talking about what's going on in Europe or what's going on in the United States or even what China is doing on the continent of Africa. Black people, our only solution to this exploitation of our bodies and our resources rests in our creating our own systems where we can reclaim our bodies, reclaim our minds, reclaim our natural resources, our reality in a way that it benefits us. We are not going to progress under any form of capitalism. And so that's the problem of being an exploited group in this system. Capitalism transforms everything into a commodity. It reduces human value to a dollar sign, and that's why many people, in order to feel good about themselves, have to adorn their bodies with things that suggest monetary value, whether it's gold chains, whether it's designer clothes, whether it's a certain kind of sneaker on your foot, whether it's the kind of car you drive. We're looking to express value, but the value that many of us are trying to attribute to ourselves is external, because the question hasn't been answered. What is our worth just as we are but naked? mm-hmm. with our genius and with our creative ability? How valuable are we? Are we, in fact, created in the likeness and the image of an all-powerful creator, and therefore we have worth just as we are? Because once we agree to that, Sister Q, we'll stop harming one another. Once mm-hmm. I recognize that in you is the same divine spark that is inside myself, and that you are just as valuable as I am, I will never do you harm. But if
For sure.
I haven't made that mental shift, and the only way I understand value is something external to myself, then we're going to be in a situation of taking advantage of each other. And so that's the problem of the exploitation of this system. It is a rape of people who do the work. The second problem of capitalism is it is this idea of the hyper-extraction of fossil fuels. So not only does capitalism rape the workers, it rapes the environment. It rapes Mother Nature. And that's the other place where it's becoming increasingly unsustainable. It depends on fossil fuel for its control over the planet, because it can control the oil and the gas and at the pump. And by the way, the prices at the pump don't have to go up. That's just the white ruling class taking advantage of the moment and jacking up the prices. But meanwhile, they are extracting a tremendous amount of worth from the base of the society and funneling all of those dollars once again into the hands of a very few people at the top. So we see that this system is unsustainable, which brings us to why we say that Ujamaa is the only thing that can save us. And when we say Ujamaa, we're talking about family-centered, group-owned, cooperative businesses, a network of these businesses, not just a handful of small-scale cooperative businesses. We are talking about the building of a complete global ecosystem. In other words, everything that you and I need for food, clothing, shelter, energy, the education of our children, the health care of our community, all of that will be provided by cooperative, family-centered, group-owned business enterprises that we set up and operate. It's inside of that ecosystem that we can create a possibility of viable and positive living for ourselves and for our children. The exciting thing about that, Sister Q, which really just causes me, you know, to be on pins and needles all the time, is that mm-hmm. this is something that we don't have to ask anybody to do.
For sure.
We have everything within our means right now to do this tomorrow. We don't have to beg Congress. We don't have to wait for the Supreme Court to pass down a ruling. We don't have to ask Joe and Kamala to produce an executive order. We can pool the money that we have in our wallets tonight, the money that we have in our purses tonight, build a reservoir, a financial base, and open cooperative businesses. Now, that may not seem like a big deal, but we have to understand that inside of the business, whatever the enterprise is, rests the philosophy and the values of the society that patronizes that business. Every mm-hmm. time the register goes ka-ching, a certain set of values is being promulgated, is being advertised, is being promoted, is being expressed. So in the capitalist environment, when the register goes ka-ching, that means violence is being done on somebody, somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
But in a cooperative business, when the register goes ka-ching, that means people are being affirmed. that the environment is being taken care of. It means that the ancestors are being venerated and honored. It means that the children are being prepared for. And so that is why this is not something that is it's not something that we can debate. It's not something that we should live with another moment. If we truly value ourselves, if we understand our intrinsic worth as beings on the planet, then we recognize that we simply must create these vehicles and these institutions for ourselves. No one else is going to do it. Now, you know, our institutions will be big enough and bold enough and grand enough that other people who want to take advantage of our model certainly can do so. But these institutions will certainly provide for us the food, the clothing, the shelter, the energy, the transportation, the health care, the elder care, everything that our community needs to thrive will be provided through our own businesses. And that's the point that we're trying to make when we say Ujamaa is the only thing that can save us. So we're very clear that when we say Ujamaa, that is a particular kind of cooperative business. When we say family-centered, Ujamaa at its root means familyhood. And what Mwalimu Julius Nyerere meant when he coined that term was he was saying this is an African expression of how our people relate to each other day to day, how we do commerce with each other, how we use our gifts in service of one another, and this is how we create a reality that can sustain us going forward that honors our ancestors when we look back. That is, if you think about it, it brings chills to you because you recognize, say, all this time we've been living in this foreign land under this alien conceptual framework when now we have the opportunity to build exactly what we need for ourselves. And so what we say in Ulu is, you know, we have a $50 annual fee that's for administrative purposes, and then we have co-op units that go for $1,000. And it's the sale of those co-op units that enables us to pool our money and to create a reservoir of resources that we then can open the cooperative businesses that meet our needs. And we should be thinking in terms of a multi-billion dollar operation. This is not, you know, a couple hundred dollars or a couple of thousand dollars. This is $1 billion to $1 trillion global complex of businesses that put African descended people once again in the forefront of the planetary leadership, not only in terms of having harnessed our own natural resources and our own natural wealth, but also in terms of showing the world a way of living that is truly sustainable, that honors Mother Nature as a living being and shows the proper way to exist on the planet in relationship with her. Anything short of that will fail. And time is running out. If we don't gain control over this business of climate change between now and 2040, and that's being generous, it's really closer to 2035, we may reach a climate collapse where we've just done so much damage to the weather cycles, the water cycles, the weather cycles. We've put so much CO2 into the atmosphere that it will eliminate human beings on the planet. That's the choice that we're staring at. The good news is if we move quickly, we can avert that. And at the same time, we can propel ourselves back into global leadership as we once were, being the first parents on the planet. Let me pause there. There may be questions or comments.
There's no one with their hand raised on the board. I have a question for you, Brother Ankie. Do you think that with being that we are in the situation where we are with everything falling down around us, that it would be easier to get people to catch our vision and want to join with us? Because, you know, I think when people, you know, had good jobs and everything and they thought they were living the American dream and they had made it, so to speak, I think people would not be so open to an alternative. However, now that the system that they had been participating in is clearly falling apart, I would think that people would be open to an alternative, and I wanted to know what you think about.
I would be in agreement with you, sis. I think you're absolutely right that the fact that things are not, they're no longer hunky-dory, the people are looking around, they realize that something is terribly wrong and that we need to build something that is sustainable. I think there's probably a much larger audience for our conversation now than, say, 25 years ago. Mm-hmm. What I do find, though, is that we've become, many of us have become so well, I'll say it this way. We've been entrenched in capitalism so long that we think that this is the only system that can work. And that is the biggest obstacle in front of us. Yet people, you could ask 100 people on the street, you know, how is the world looking to you right now? And they tell you, this is crazy. But they're distracted at the same time. You know, we're being, so much stuff is being thrown at us. We think that the answer lies in Washington, or big business has the answer, or we're going to get the answer from, you know, celebrities that have platforms, or you know, influencers on social media.
Mm-hmm.
The truth of the matter simply is this: we are living in the historical moment when the economic model that has served the human family for the last 400 years has simply run out of gas, period. And we have to move to an alternative economic model. And that alternative is cooperative economics. We have to move from private ownership of the means of production to group-owned means of production. And in that shift, those groups that understand the shift and then pool their resources to build their own economic institutions, they will survive and thrive. Those of us that are too committed or wed to the idea that, you know, these capitalist formations are the only thing that can work, they will go down with the ship. They will be like on the Titanic. You know, they told them that thing couldn't sink, but it sank, didn't it?
For sure.
And so, you know, this business of reforming the system is like rearranging the deck chairs on the Titanic. Forget that. That ship is going to the bottom of the ocean.
Right.
Our work is to recognize that we have a small window of time to build a viable, sustainable economic model that can work for African people, whether we're on the continent or somewhere in the diaspora. We have the genius. We have the creativity. We have the resources at our fingertips. When we think about it, 1,000 people pooling $1,000 each, that equals $1 million. And there's 1,000 people. There are, in most of our major cities, there are several million of us residing.
Sure.
And,
mm-hmm.
and all of us in these urban areas are feeling the pain of this collapsing system all around us. and a large number of us can put our hands on $1,000. I mean, it's not, that's not like, you know, unreachable. So we have the means to build the economic infrastructure to take us into the next century. Brother Shabaka's point, what's going to be the economic model that carries us into 2030 and 2040 and 2050? Now is the time for us to begin building that. And the good news about ULU is we have been doing the research and the groundwork laying for the last 8 years, so that now us lifting us is an actual entity. It's a legal entity. We've got the bylaws and the guidance mechanisms in place where we can receive those funds, and we have the expertise to then set up businesses that can be viable and take us into the future. Do we have all the answers? No. But collectively, we have everything that we need. And the good news about ULU as a system, it's democratic, so that the way it operates, it draws upon all of the intelligence, all of the skills, all of the experiences of our people, of our community, to find the best way to go forward together. And so while one person may not have all the answers, several of us in any formation have most of the answers that we need to carry us to the next step. So that's what has me excited, the fact that this is not only doable, it's already done. Now we just need people to jump on board and run with us. And think about it in terms of the movement that the Honorable Messiah Marcus Garvey started with the UNIA. You know, he had a vision, Africa for the Africans, that he talked about this international trade from, you know, the Western Hemisphere to the continent of Africa, and he foresaw a unified African continent being a global presence that catapulted Black people into prominence everywhere we existed. And people caught that vision, got excited about it, and they pooled their monies, which enabled them to buy the steamships, to open the various businesses that they operated. And the only thing that caused it not to work was the FBI had informers inside who brought the organization down from internally. It wasn't because the vision wasn't solid. It could well have succeeded based on the idea and the blueprint that had been laid out. And so we find ourselves at a similar place with a blueprint that will work. And our challenge is to get as many of our people to see it, to get excited about it, to pool their resources with us, and to help us build going into the future.
Thank you for that, Brother Auntie. Usually I ask, what would you like to make sure the family takes with them from this evening's discussion as we're winding up? But I think almost everything you said. But do you have one point that you really want to drive home before we close?
Yes. Thank you, Sister Q. This idea of Ujima, that has got to become our byword. When people say, what's the solution? It's got to be Ujima. And now many of us know Ujima from the Kwanzaa celebrations. It's the fourth principle of Kwanzaa. And it's a value, and it's the value of cooperative economics. But it is more than just a value. It is a whole philosophical consciousness about how the world should be organized, about how the world, about the spiritual laws that guide the way the planet operates. That's what people tap into when we begin to practice Ujamaa as a collective. And so when people say, you know, what's the word? The word needs to be Ujima. And what we mean by that is the new ecosystem that's going to save us as a people on the planet and help save the human species who embrace this economic ecosystem called Ujima. That would be the word that I would leave for us to think about, Sister Q.
Thank you for that, Brother Amti. Thank you also for all the information you shared with us tonight. We want to thank everyone that joined us this evening. We'd like to invite you to join us again Thursday evening at 9 o'clock Eastern Time for another installment of Dare to Win. Peace.
Peace.
Gonna make a change for once in my life. Gonna feel real good. Gonna make a difference. Gonna make it right. And I turned up the collar on my favorite winter coat. This wind is blowing my mind. I see the kids in the street. Not enough to eat. Who am I to be blind, pretending not to see them eat? I saw a disregard, a broken bottle top, and a one man flow. They follow each other on the wind and know, 'cause they got nowhere to go. That's why no one gets to know.
It's gonna feel real good. Some more change.